Welcome to the CG Pro podcast. This is episode 67, and today we have with us Devon Mathis, who I'm going to introduce in just a second. If you enjoy today, you can follow us at becomecgpro.com or join our free Facebook group. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome Devon today. Devon is a lighting supervisor and works a lot in the world of virtual productions, currently at Sony Pictures Torchlight. Devon, welcome. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, dude. It's great to be here.
You bet. Yeah, it's great. Great to have you here. And I'm excited to hear about what you can talk about today. And but first, I'd love to just hear a little bit about how you got here. How did you, especially love hearing about kind of any early inspirations you had? Is this something you always wanted to get into? Did you stumble into it? What was your path here?
Actually stumbled into it. That's such a fun question. So I got my very first 3D job in Dallas as an intern at a health facility. And we were working in Unreal Engine for children and young adults on the autism spectrum to help them normalize themselves with like how to interact with people and how to understand communication and stuff, right? And it was all in VR, and that's where I started. Wow. And then I got a call from Macnopus in LA, it was like 2017. And I joined up with those guys. And it was in those days, early VR stuff, little bit of virtual production because they were starting The Lion King back then, or they were wrapping up The Lion King back then. But it was a lot of VR stuff for me to start. I was an environment artist. And then 2018-ish, you know, one of my producers was like, hey, Devon, we're going to be doing some more virtual production stuff. And I didn't know what that was. And they're like, but like you led the art team for this one VR project for Disney called Myth. You want to lead the virtual production department? And I'm like, sure. I don't know what that is. And it was crazy because, like, you know, Macnopus is run by a lot of really great people, but Ben Grossman and Alex Hinning, Oscar winners, right? And so they have a lot of connections with Hollywood. So I never once thought I'd be working in movies or anything like that. I just happened to be like a lighter in Unreal Engine, some Unity stuff, environment artist. And then all of a sudden we're working with like all of these filmmakers for people that like I grew up watching all the time. And it was just insane to me. And it was that guy, that producer, completely changed my life. Like, I got definitely bit by the film bug, and I've been chasing that high ever since, man, every day. So yeah, I'm a cinematographer now, and I'm a lighting supervisor over at Torchlight, and life has been really, really rewarding and really exciting, especially like in this new space of like virtual content, virtual worlds, right? Unreal Engine stuff, clashing with traditional filmmaking, and how did those two come together?
Yeah, we're still working that one out for sure. Yeah. That's super cool. Yeah. So before that amazing job and a really, really cool, definite personal connection to the autism community. Before that, how did you get to that point? Did you study for this? Did you do a degree or anything? How did you get
yeah,
to that?
Yeah. So I was at the University of Texas at Dallas, and I think they've had this program. I think it was either the second year of this program. It's called Arts and Technology is their major at University of Texas at Dallas. It's in Richardson, right outside Dallas. And when I got to college, you know, before college, I was like one person. And I got to college and it was like a little switch flipped. And I was just head to the grindstone, always working and doing stuff. So what I think school taught me a whole lot when I was still there was that how to rely and how to teach myself, because a lot of the content that I was being taught at the time, it was like 2015, 2016, wasn't necessarily exactly what I needed. So like a technical level. This is like when Substance 2 came out, right? Substance Designer 2 or 1, or I can't remember what it was. And I'm trying to pick up and learn all these things that I can. And I'm showing it to all my other classmates, and we're working hard together on projects and stuff. And I got that internship because one of those days we're all in the lab, but every desk was taken. And I saw one of these guys come in. He's like looking for a spot, you know? And he's about to leave. And I was like, no, 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 here, come sit with me. So we worked together. And me just doing that for him, he's like, hey, you know, I work at this place and we could use another intern. Would you like to come join up with us? And that's how I started my whole journey, was just being nice.
That's an important quality for sure. And that's something mm-hmm. that I always tell people to become as good as you possibly can, but also to stay humble and be nice to people. It's not everybody does that as they get really good at something. So it's very, very crucial. Mm-hmm. And really good to hear that that validation on that topic. What was your major? What were you studying?
So it was literally called arts and technology, but within arts and technology, you know, you're able, this was at the time, I don't know if it's changed now, but at the time, you know, you're able to put a focus on exactly what it is you wanted to do. So then it was environment art. And that's what I was doing a lot of, 3D environment art, environmental storytelling. So a lot of Unreal, a lot of ZBrush, a lot of Maya, Substance Painter and Designer had just come out. So I was really, really pushing in Designer and doing all kinds of really crazy, like tileable materials. I mean, crazy for back when that came out. Now people are like doing insane things, but like I looked up to a lot of cool people early then, like Javier Perez and what's his name? Something Olwen. He used to work at Naughty Dog, but I don't know if he's there anymore, but I looked up to a lot of these guys on ArtStation because I would always look at ArtStation every day to see where's the bar. Like, how good do I need to be to get up to this point? So I was always looking for like, where do I need to go? How good do I need to push my skills far enough to get to this point? And that was always a driving force for me, like every day looking on ArtStation, seeing what everyone's doing.
That's cool. Yeah, it's great to get inspired by things like that. And at the beginning of my 3D career, it was a lot of CG Society, which was a very beloved site. And it kind of did both those, in both inspiration and also put some fear in me as well. Like thinking, how am I going to get to be that good? But
right.
Not, a little bit of that's not so bad.
Yeah, yeah. It's good to get pushed, you know.
What tools did you in your first job that you mentioned, were you mostly using Unreal? Were you using a mix of different things?
That job, I got that internship, and what they liked about my portfolio at the time was that I was doing a lot of very modular, like kits of things, which also included Substance Designer, making really good tileable materials in like technical trim sheets, you know, how you'd like correctly space them so many pixels apart so that it UVs correctly. So at the time, like I remember looking at the GDC paper for Sunset Overdrive back then, when they had written their paper on how they did trim sheets and how they did like the auto normals for like edges and things like that and auto damage and things. So I was doing a lot of Substance Designer, doing a lot of Maya for sure. Sometimes ZBrush, I would always try to challenge myself to like try to do as much like texturing stuff as I could, even if it was considered sculpting, and try to do as much as I could in Designer, right? And to not leave it, because like I could go back to ZBrush. Because like the Sony Santa Monica team, the God of War team, they're some of the best sculptors on the planet. And I would always look to their work back then to think, how can I do what they're doing by hand, but procedurally back in my textures? Right, so that's and then Unreal Engine, of course. All of our stuff was in Unreal Engine. Unreal Engine 4 back then. I don't remember the exact version, though.
I remember Unreal 4, Unreal 4, even 3. Good.
UDK?
Every version's been good.
Were you on UDK? I was never on UDK. Yeah.
A long time ago. Not like seriously, just a little.
Oh, okay.
But really got into it seriously properly in 4. When I started doing some professional work in it, in various different forms, in sort of theme park entertainment in the beginning,
cool.
As an offshoot from, a break from movies, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
As we're talking about tools, how have you seen the tools evolve over the years you've been involved in them?
I was really, really excited early on because Magnopus, even my internship, they really liked this like technical approach that I took to environment art stuff, right? And there was always like a new tool coming out or a new feature in Unreal or Substance or whatever. And I would like latch onto that new thing and I would really, really push for it and do things to it. So I remember like, you know, having to really, really be careful with my UV placement and texel densities back then, right? And then tools came out to make that easier. And I remember having to worry about like the squashing and stretching of textures or being pixel accurate. And your light map UVs in the same way for those. And what else, dude? Like, oh, and in Unreal Engine, like when you had to like, and you probably still do to an extent, making sure like in Unreal that like your light map, like densities across everything is like going good. But like, there's so many either tools now or just built-in features where you don't necessarily have to think about them the way that we used to. And I keep in my heart, I keep wanting to say back then, but back then wasn't that long ago. Like it changes so quick, right? And I used to feel this way about like, wow, okay, cool. I'll learn this new thing. And then I'm going to be really, really useful. And I'll learn this thing. And then a year later or less than a year later, a tool would come out or a plugin would come out and it would just be like, boop, like done. And I'm like, man. So at some point in my career, I shifted away from thinking about chasing the tool and chasing the tech and putting more into being creative, right? Like if you look at, you know, Steven Spielberg, that guy's not in Unreal Engine learning how to do light map UVs, right? He's a great storyteller.
Not UVs, yeah. But in, right. In Unreal Engine in a different way.
Yeah. So at least from what I know, I don't think he's the most technically inclined, like doing all the hard technical stuff. He's a great, amazing, fantastic storyteller. And so somewhere along my career, at the spectrum of being completely technical and completely creative, I used to be over here into more technical. Now I've been shifting more over here. And a lot of the tools coming out nowadays make that stuff easier. Like I've become, at least to me, like self-validated. When you see things, like if you're in Photoshop and you just want to, when I wanted to make a mask of something back then, I would have to like make a mask of my sky or the person in the thing.
Yeah.
Now you can just like tell Photoshop, hey, just make a mask for the sky. And then, and it's like, it's so crazy, which is great because it gets rid of like this technology requirement, knowledge requirement, and it gets it out of the way just so you can focus on being creative, which is ultimately like what we're here for, right? Like we consume either games or television or movies for the entertainment factor of like this incredible story that's in front of us, and removing a lot of these barriers gives more time to be creative.
So in describing how you've taken emphasis off the tool itself, because as you said, they change a lot. What do you focus on in terms of developing your creative chops, I guess, if it's more the fundamentals that you're focused on now? What's some things you do to help develop that?
There are some really, really big things. I had a mentor back at Magnopus, and he taught me quite a lot and changed my entire view and practices of how I approach this stuff. So for a long time, you know, I had been like a photographer and I'd like taking pictures. And I say photographer, right? Because I just did it for fun. And I have a Sony camera. I had a Sony camera before Sony. So this is not a shameless plug. But
they make good cameras. I was fair enough.
Their cameras are nice. It was a stills camera. And, you know, I live in LA. So there's lots of pretty things to, you know, point and shoot. So I'd go around LA sometimes just for fun, take pictures. And then I started to realize, you know, my job as a lighter, as I was taking photographs, I'm like, this is so interesting. Like, look at how the light hits the Griffith Observatory like this. Or I would remember, you know, in winter, I know where the sun rises when I'm at the observatory, because I go there quite often. I know where the sun rises when it's winter, and I know where it rises when it's summer. And I know what that light looks like whenever there are these big mountains. And I know what it looks like when the sun creeps over the mountain and it creates this super sharp light that cuts through. And then right as it peaks up, the light just explodes in the sky, right? And so a lot of me just observing, really, really observing what I'm doing and doing photography, because now I do it very seriously. So now I've done like a lot of architectural photos. I do a lot of photos on set. I'm a cinematographer on set. So all this stuff has come in handy for me now. But just observing things is like so big because it's so easy to miss the fine details of things, right? It's very, very easy to miss it. You have to really look for it. It's the same thing like when I watch movies. When I watch movies and I'm watching what Greg Fraser is doing, right? If I'm trying to like pick his brain of like, if I can't hang out with the guy, then I can at least look at his work and be like, how did Greg do this? You know, I'll watch it first for fun, just for the entertainment factor. And then the second and the third time I'll watch it and just really pick apart, like, how did Greg get this shot? Or how did Greg light this thing? Or we were just talking about Oppenheimer before this started, you know, how did Hoyt like really get this going? Like, how did he achieve this look? Same on Ad Astra. Ad Astra, beautiful film by Hoyt as well. And El Conde, that cinematographer, they've had so much fun, but really just like I would go on ArtStation and be like, what are people doing right now? That for me is like, now it's movies. Whereas, as I just said earlier, like I never thought I'd be working in movies, but now I'm like looking at the greats, you know, Roger Deakins and everybody, thinking, how can I achieve some of this? And so I take a lot of that I do on set or on my own personal time. And how do I bring that back into Unreal Engine to make things a lot more cinematic, you know, a lot to aid in the story of what's going on.
So how do you do that?
So I think what's really important is to, like, when I would look at images as an environment artist, I would always break down, if I wanted to like study someone's work, I'd always break down, what are the major shapes in this image, right? Break this down into the simplest forms from a 3D modeling perspective when I did that stuff. And from there, I'd piece myself back to like, oh, okay, I understand now kind of how you put these big shapes in the foreground and you kind of push these things off in the background and it makes a really nice composed image. Nowadays, it's a very similar idea, but for lighting. So for lighting, I'm either looking at photography or I'm looking at paintings. I wish LA had its own Met. I know we have the Hammer Museum and we have a few others, but the Met is so beautiful. But just looking at these pieces of art and really breaking down fundamentally, like, what is the key light inside of this scene right now? What is the big source? And if you don't have that big key light, like for me, you see like here, like it's going across my face, right? Cause I got a big window right here. And I placed myself on this couch for a reason so that it would look nice. And you can see I have a gradation of light coming this way. So this image is no longer like a flat image. And my face isn't flat, right? So you can study images and just break it down to fundamentals. What is the key light, which is very important, every shot, figure out what that's gonna be. And then what are gonna be like some nice rim lights or top lights, like for my hair. Like, I don't know if this camera actually picks it up, but like getting light off the shoulder, getting light, toppy light up here, or especially like on these back shoulders, how can we get that in Unreal Engine or on set? Like, it doesn't matter, or painting it, whatever. Like, lighting is lighting. And these are all just tools. The brush, the gaffer who's hanging up all the lights, the Unreal lighting artist, these are all just tools, right? So I don't necessarily put a heavy emphasis on like the tool at hand. I'm fairly agnostic as to whatever the tool is, but understanding lighting is what I think is incredibly important. And then how do you communicate that? That's also incredibly important.
Yeah. So you mentioned looking at other people's work. Is there a kind of way that you like to break it down? Do you get in touch with people and ask them questions about it? Do you look at ShotDeck? Always a good resource.
ShotDeck's great.
Yeah.
No, yeah, I love ShotDeck. Yeah, I love talking with people. As you can tell, if no one here stops me from talking, I'll just keep talking. But I love ShotDeck, and I love talking with other cinematographers. And I love like the director for American Beauty. I remember in a Deakins podcast, he talked about how his whole background was all theater, right? And then American Beauty is like either one of the first things or the first things that he ever got to direct. And when he got there, he's asking everybody all these like silly questions, right? And he's like, hey, so how does this camera work? Like, how do you turn it on? And they're like, what do you mean, how do you turn it on? And he's asking all these super basic questions. And I think even recently there was an article about Sydney Sweeney, like going around and just wanting to learn, and there's no pride, there's no ego. It's full humility to just kind of learn the craft. So I love reaching out to people and being like, hey, this piece of work that you did, this is really cool. Can we have coffee and hang out and chat about it or something? Oh no, I lost my train of thought. What were we just talking about?
Well, just your process, I guess, or just some of the things that you do to try and understand what makes good lighting. Because I think it's something that I definitely ran into at the beginning of my career. I was a software engineer, you know, got stumbling into the world of, intentionally stumbling into the world of visual effects. But I was very used to writing code, and I wasn't very used to lighting scenes. And I got some very, let's say, helpful feedback at the beginning in terms of where I was not showing up in terms of understanding lighting. So I had some good mentoring there. But yeah, just curious about how you approach the pursuit, because it's a continual thing. I know it's not just something that you study once and then you've got it.
Oh, like, dude, yeah.
How you continue to kind of understand lighting or break it down or seek guidance?
I think at first, because my background was more technical, I would break it down technically. Like I talked about the foundations of like all this stuff kind of around me. And then when my understanding of like the technicalities was like good to go, I started to look more into, well, how does this image make me feel? You know, colors and value shifting, you know, like being like front lit versus silhouetted, or like light coming from here or like here. These things all make you feel a certain way, or at least I feel like they do. And colors make you feel a certain way. You know, if we're talking about like the ending to Jurassic Park, when the T-Rex gets all the velociraptors and it does his big roar, or she does her big roar, and that's like the cool hero shot at the end of the movie, right? And that was lit like very like heroic and valiantly inside that room. But like, how would you feel if like there was just like one light on? What if it was just like one big top light? And maybe it doesn't feel like that anymore. And I feel like once I got past this, like, I call it technical. I don't know what other word to call it. It's like technical barrier of like, yeah, you need a key light and you need a rim and you need a fill. Like, you need those things. I think putting it to practice in any way that I could, any way, whether it's observing or I'm in Unreal Engine and I'm just like taking environments that I've already made and like I just do over them again, or I download environments off the marketplace or whatever. Like I go get my camera or my phone and I try and do it with a lampshade or something. Doing it over and over in different styles started to click in my head. It was like a little light bulb went off, or I could finally see the Matrix or something. It was, I think once you can get to that point of like understanding how this makes you feel, will really, really, that's a big separator. I feel like there are things that look cool, right? Like, oh, that looks kind of cool. But there's not many things that like, this makes me feel sad. And I don't know why this makes me feel sad. Or this is like spooky. Like this is, I don't know. Like, well, how are they making this feel spooky? And then I'll study like how they did that, right? And that's a great way too, to like mimicking people. Like when painters go to the Louvre to like, and just paint all these masterful paintings, they're just doing it themselves, right? And it's not that they're like trying to copy these people, but they're practicing, like getting as close as they can to all these different paintings on a wall. In my opinion, a lighter or cinematographer should be doing as much of that as they can as well, through any means, whatever it is, on your phone, observing, Photoshop, Unreal Engine. Unreal Engine is a good one because it's free, right? There's lots of free stuff. So you can download any number of environments and relight them in different ways and just take a look.
That's great. Great advice. Yeah. Really interesting to hear your take on it, and how you observe it, really being what artistry is observing, right? It's observing the world and then maybe trying to reproduce it in some way or create something new out of things that you've seen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you're taking inspiration from other people's work, you're observing the real world, you're being conscious about it, you're mm-hmm. if I can try and summarize what you said is being conscious of what you're seeing, and understanding
100%
how that's making you feel, and then really being aware of that. That's what drives it.
Yeah. And if you see, like, if you watch a movie, one of the, like, just as they will copy paintings, they'll try to paint and match what they're seeing. If you can do the same thing with a, like, if you go on Shot Deck and just pull up, like, you know, two people in a wide frame or something, right? And just try to replicate that with basic shapes back in Unreal Engine, try and match that lighting back in Unreal as like a quick 1 hour study, right? And just, it'll help you understand, like, oh, so I thought it was this way, but it's not this way. And then, like, you'll learn very quick. It's no different than these guys when they paint, you know? Lighting's the same way. Like, you really should put it to practice and like mimicking work and trying to match something like a still from Shot Deck, which I use all the time. I don't work a Shot Deck, by the way, but it's a great website. I love it. That's like a rocket ship to getting better. It's just looking at great work, try to match it.
Right. Yeah. Having that experiential exercise driven approach mm-hmm. to it rather than just reading. There's some good stats around that I've read in the past around how much you retain based on what you read or what you see or what you hear mm-hmm. being less so than interactive work in something you're actually practicing and trying. It's a lot of what we do at the school really practically driven for that reason. So you learn more of what you do, right?
Yep. And then you can speak to it, you know what I mean? It's like one thing to read it from a book and then recite that knowledge, but it's another thing to do the work and then explain it.
So can you tell us a little bit about what your job looks like at the moment? What do you, you don't have to give me all the details about Fallout that you can't tell me, but
yeah.
What do you spend your time doing as a lighting supervisor?
So now, you know, I've been at Sony Pictures at a new department called Torchlight, right? We're on the lighting supervisor at. So we're working with directors that are very early on in the process of their movie making. And it might even be that they need to get a thing greenlit. And so at the moment, a lot of what I'm doing is working with directors, and sometimes there's a cinematographer attached. So we'll work with both of them and we'll figure out, like, hey, so what is the mood and the tone and the atmosphere of, like, of this story? What are these big emotional beats during the script that should make us feel a certain way? You know, I'm always asking directors, you know, hey, so in the script, what is the lighting called for in the script? And what I mean by that is, like, what is the emotional state of what's going on in the script? You know, oh, well, right now these two people, they're really fighting, or these two people, they're asleep. Right? You're like, okay. And then how do you think we should be feeling, you know? And all of those questions about emotions and feeling, like, all of those esoteric things, I try to bring them back, and then I'll do big broad stroke lighting back inside of Unreal. And we'll be like, hey, do you mean, like, you want something like this? And like, that's exactly it. But here are some notes, and get back to me in like 2 weeks. You know, we're in Unreal. So a lot of these filmmakers, they're not working in Unreal, so they don't know how fast real time is. So I'll be like, oh, hang on, we can do it, like, right here. What are your notes? Just let me know. And then, like, we'll start doing the notes, and they'll be like, oh my God, this is so fast, you know, because all Lumen and all that stuff inside of Unreal, right? So we're doing big broad strokes either in Unreal, or I'm doing a bunch of, like, light paintings in Photoshop, where they'll give us some ideas about what they're looking for, and we'll come up with, like, color keys or mood boards or an Unreal, a whole 3D scene that's, like, lit, like, pretty quick. Like, we're moving very fast. So it's not like we're baking lights right now. We're not doing that stuff anymore because we're moving too quickly. And we have a big emphasis on being fluid and flexible. And so that's where we are right now. Sometimes they take me from the beginning of a project and they put me right in the middle of one. So sometimes we're doing, like, we need to go on set to do something, whether they need someone to help out being, like, an AC on something, or just to hang out with the DP to, like, help, you know, navigate, you know, virtual production and an LED volume or something, right? I've done a number of those in my past. We did Westworld and Fallout, and so they'll bring me on to hang out with DPs to help explain, like, all right, cool, so here's our wall, and then here's, like, what it's doing, here's what you and your gaffer are doing, let's work together to make a super blended set, like what, like it's married together. And that blending, like that marrying of an LED set, is really tricky and it's really tough. And in my opinion, that's kind of what makes or break an LED volume scene. Like if you can tell that it's an LED volume. So they'll send me into these places to help eliminate that feeling from an audience perspective. So sometimes it's at the start, sometimes in the middle, and we haven't done things near the end yet, but I wouldn't be surprised with the way that we're moving right now at Torchlight.
So you, when you're in Unreal, are you doing kind of previs or tech viz or final imagery? Like what kind of states are the production in?
We do what we call, like, because when you, when we're working with filmmakers, traditional filmmakers, they have worked with previs for a lot of their career, right? And to them, previs is like gray, blocky, or very low polygon, roughed out models that just look like whatever. And sometimes directors don't even use them. Like they just have them and then they just throw them away and they just do whatever they want to do. But with what we have at Torchlight, we understand that. And so what we're trying to offer is like advanced visualization, where everybody that I work with, you know, we all come from a different sector within movie making industry stuff, right? And so that's great because we have lots of perspectives and opinions on how to make the same thing. So we're not stuck in a bubble of like, it should be done this way because it's always been done this way. So we put a lot of emphasis on being fast and flexible. So we offer heightened visualization where it looks 10 times better than what typical previs would normally offer you. We make it in like less than half the time. It takes us, like a lot of our projects, we'll spend a week or two getting just like the big breath of it all in there. But it looks like you've spent like months on this thing. We've gone so quick and so far with this. But that's great because it offers other department heads a chance to come in and ask questions because it's in such a state that the cinematographer can ask, oh, this is really cool. So like, but I was really hoping it could be sunset. And you're like, okay, cool. Let's just make it sunset. And they're like, oh my gosh, like what else could we learn? The director might ask, well, I'd really like to do like, you know, a fight scene. And I'd like for these two guys to be doing this. And they're like, all right, cool. So at Torchlight, you know, we have full motion capture suits. We do all the motion capture in our little room and we put it back into Unreal within a few hours. And then we're ready to go with whatever blocking the director wants to do or the production designer. If they have blueprints, right, tech viz, that of a set they're going to build somewhere else, we can quickly visualize it before they build it, have the director come to Torchlight. And you know, we have a lot of cinematography equipment in our room that talks one-to-one with Unreal. So they'll pick up this like camera equipment. And as they pick it up, the camera in Unreal moves with you. So they can really film their movie inside of our space that tracks you everywhere you go. And it tracks you back in Unreal. So I can build that production designer set. The director can shoot his shots in there. We might learn that, you know what? I'm going to have a guy flying through this window, but the window's too small. We need to make that window bigger. Also, this like pillar, it's just too big. It's kind of in the way. Let's get rid of this thing and let's do some more stuff over here. Then we can give that back to the production designer. They can edit that blueprint before they've built it still. And then, you know, when they get all the notes and director's like, this is fantastic, this is great, then you can start to build stuff. So I like to say that we have two big spheres of influence at Torchlight. One of them is pure creativeness. What is the mood and the look and the tone of this movie? How should it look and feel across the board? And then the other sphere of influence is like the practicality, the production side of it, the nuts and bolts. How are we going to actually get this done? So we do a lot of, technically it's previs, but we like to call it advanced visualization and a whole lot of tech viz.
And are you using assets as they're being developed for final, for like, do you do any like final stuff in the engine or does it move out into other software and other renderers?
We're looking to do final because like we just announced ourselves in January and then we all just started, you know, just less than a year ago. So we're looking to get to final. But what we do in the meantime is we can get it pretty freaking close to final. We can get 85% of the way there, but you know, that last 15% takes the longest, right? Because that's the like polishing of like making this thing perfect. But we set up our whole pipeline so that even though we work in Unreal, we understand visual effects might not work in Unreal. And so we prepare all of our stuff so that we can, remember how I talked about earlier, previs just gets thrown away. So we prepare it so that it's not thrown away. Visual effects can take what we have and keep it going because it's at such a quality that it runs well in Unreal and it works well for visual effects. And
so using the same assets essentially that you'd use in that mode in doing visualization, mm-hmm. just those exact same assets and moving further down the pipe, maybe into some other tools and into RenderMan or Maya or Houdini or something.
Yeah, we start, you know, modeling things either in Maya or ZBrush, or we just have like a library of things already that exist, so we can just move even quicker. But we try and stick inside of Unreal as much as we can for so many things, dude. Like we're always in Unreal. That's 98% of our time is in Unreal.
That's cool. Yeah, really, really cool to hear that.
Because you can do so much in there now. Like you can model, you can UV now with 5.3 and now with Embergen and Liquigen, that stuff's really dope. I know it's outside of Unreal, but you can bring that stuff back in and then you have these really cool like fluid dynamics or cool explosions and stuff. So we're always just trying to find a way to stay in the engine when we can, but understand to be flexible for when visual effects wants this whole project, you know, later on down the line.
You guys using so Maya as a main DCC, anyone using Blender?
We would use Blender for things that Maya just doesn't handle super well because, you know, Blender is open source, right? So there's some things, very niche specific things that it's like, oh, I think there's a plugin for Blender, whereas it doesn't really exist for Maya, but it's mostly Maya ZBrush.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, just interesting to see how the tools are evolving and changing, how some studios are now starting to adopt things like Unreal or Blender or Houdini for lighting, where it was usually only VFX. Any other kind of evolution moving away from the traditional VFX tools?
Moving away. You know, we still use Substance and we still use Maya. But it's so interesting to see Unreal is like trying to incorporate this stuff in Unreal to make it like a one-stop shop kind of thing. In all my experience, like working with like things like once it does everything, it's usually lacking in some capacity, right? It's not really good at like just one thing. So I don't know if we're leaving things behind per se. We're still using these things. It's just that we try to find unique and creative ways to stay in the engine when we can.
You guys using any USD?
No, I mean, everyone, like some studios want to use USD, but I had worked with USD for a couple of years and we were trying to find a good way to get this back into Unreal. But as you probably know, you know, USD is great, but like if you're a studio that does a lot of things in Unreal, and I mean Niagara or particular like shader effect related things, or probably even now, like if you were to use the PCGs, the procedurally, whatever PGC stands, procedurally generated content, whatever stands
content
for.
Content generation, yeah.
Yeah. Those things, USD doesn't know what that is. And if you were to bring that to any other software, it doesn't know how to like take an Unreal, like very specific shader node and then convert that back into like something Arnold or Maya or Houdini understands. So it's tough. It's like And I've been watching, I mean, I've been passively watching USD updates come through all the time, but I have yet to see it really fulfill its duty. Now it's probably great outside of Unreal. And maybe Unreal will get it one day, but as long as they keep making things that are very specific to Unreal and keep marketing people to like, you should use PCGs or, you know, it's great. It speeds up your workflow. It does all these amazing things. That's just one extra thing that like a USD is going to have to try to understand to build back into it to send it back out.
Yeah, and that was the age old challenge of trying to have standards in 3D.
Yeah,
it's still a noble quest, but yeah,
noble quest indeed.
we'll keep trying.
Yeah.
So yeah, just really interested in tools, because I know they're evolving, and the way that we're approaching creating things in general is evolving. You're already describing something that's a relatively new pursuit. You know, we weren't using Unreal that long ago to do this type of work. Mm-hmm. Even that's kind of new. Something else that's new, that's starting, there's obviously a hot topic on everyone's minds, and sometimes a bit of a polarizing topic to talk about, but good old AI or machine learning or neural nets or whatever you want to call it. Are you using this, and you don't have to like say what Sony's doing necessarily, but what do you think about some of these new things that are appearing, from the generative to the things that are just supplementing the visual effects process, certain things are just helping, like traditional things like mocap and paint and roto and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm.
There, you know, when I was still an environment artist, I would always like wish and think, one of these days I'll never have to retopo ever again. And I can't wait for something to come around where I hit a button and it just magically retopos my mesh. Because we were doing VR stuff back then when I was an environment artist, and retopo is part of the job. And it's kind of boring when you got to retopo like 100 things a week, right? So, but yeah, now
modeling,
that we're
modeling
here,
where you've like model it, retopo it, UV it.
Yeah.
You've like modeling five times just for one.
I know, dude.
Yeah.
And so now that like we're actually here, where there is stuff that like, oh yeah, you just like tell it to do a thing and it will like make that for you. It's crazy. And so like, I think about it in terms of like what's happened in the past, you know, like I wonder how disruptive, because like, I mean, I was around for it, but I was way too young. Like, what was it like when 3D came around and all these 2D artists were like, well, crap, like, what am I going to do now? Like, do I have to learn 3D? Like, it's doing what I do even quicker. Sure, I'm still like doing things, but like, they're not drawing every frame over and over and over, like what they had to do, you know, for all these Disney films and such. So, and what was it like, you know, when we moved from film cameras to digital cameras, how disruptive are these forces? And so I often think about that with AI. It's like, you know, I wonder if like we're in one of those ages that's very similar to 2D to 3D or film to digital. And like, I'm curious, because we're at the start of it, so it's hard to see like how disruptive it'll ultimately be.
It's funny you say that, because the way some people talk about it online, it sounds like we're kind of at the end of it. It's all done, that everyone's like now working in AI, and all the work's gone.
Well, there's probably for sure like a lot of like smaller users using it, but the studios I feel like are going to be too nervous because of all the legal implications of moral AI. I think the only one who's doing it like right is Adobe, because Adobe is what they call it, Firefly, is that what they call it? Adobe has Adobe Stock, which users sign an agreement and they put all their pictures on there. So whatever, I think it's called Firefly, it pulls from Stock, and that's what it trains on. So that's cool, right? That they acquired those images in a rightful, good way. So that's interesting. Like, and I don't know of many others that are going about that. You'll certainly see lots of smaller filmmakers wanting to use things like Sora to quickly green light, or, you know, for their pitch deck for their film. You know, like, I wrote this script and I have this 30-second clip of what I kind of want it to be. Please give me money for my movie, right? So you'll probably see a lot of that, but I'm curious how the studios and larger productions will approach it. I don't know.
Yeah, no, me neither. That's a good answer. Yeah. Nobody does. A lot of people online talking confidently like they do know where it's going or where it is. But what about the reality of today? You know, where do you see it being useful right now?
Well, it's definitely good. You know, earlier I talked about technological barriers stop people from doing things. And this will sound off topic, but it's not off topic. But when TikTok came out, TikTok like took down the technical requirement barrier of being like a filmmaker or an editor for like things. And you can make videos so easily on TikTok. All, and it's crazy, right? And there's millions of us using TikTok and making videos all the time. And so today, I would imagine that you'll see the earliest phases have got to be like, hey, this is not going to be used for monetization in some way. So this is going to be used for like a proof of concept or a pitch deck or something like that until they can figure out the legalities behind it. And I think that you'll always, my hope, my heart always tells me that we're going to have, when you think about like Christopher Nolan, I don't believe would want to use AI to make his movies, right? When you see a Christopher Nolan film pop up on a billboard in LA somewhere, you're like, oh, it's his new movie. I gotta go see that. I love Christopher Nolan. And I don't think he's the kind of filmmaker, and many of them, I don't think many of them are the kind of filmmakers that would want to do that. Certainly there will be more than not. It might even come back to the old argument of film versus digital, where people like both of the Nolans, Christopher and Jonathan, and Quentin Tarantino, they are for film and they do everything on film and they'll never switch, right? But you have people like Roger Deakins, you know, they started out on film and then it came to digital. Now he shoots on Arri all the time and he can get a film look. And I feel like it might come down to that eventually, where you will have people who are like, I only watch pure human made films in the cinema. And I don't watch the AI stuff, which like if you, Quentin Tarantino owns two movie theaters and they show his personal collection of films and they're all 35 millimeter. And I think he has some 16 millimeter films in there. And that's really fun because someone like me, I seek to find theaters in LA that I can watch a film with the original film. So I'm taking like that experience and putting it in the future for like AI films versus like human made films. And I know that people are still like, technically, I think they might even call themselves prompt engineers, which is such an interesting job title.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like that it might just be another thing that like, I don't know how you can stop it. I don't know. It's going to keep going. I feel like I might not necessarily use it. And I understand the appeal to use it. And I understand even the financial side of using it, right? I mean, not that I agree with it, but like from like a big corporate, you know, perspective, like, sure, I get that. I mean, I don't agree with it, but I feel like it's just going to come whether we want it to or not.
I wouldn't disagree with you on that for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Make friends with our robot overlords.
Terminator 2.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the AI movie premiere, Terminator 2 parody in LA tomorrow.
Yeah.
Kind of a historic moment, I guess, one way mm-hmm. or the other. So can you tell us about Westworld? What was that like? What was it like working
Westworld
on it?
What did you do? Westworld was cool. So I was on that project, I was the VAD lead. And VAD stands for Virtual Art Department, right? And you'll usually see them on every like virtual production project. You'll have like two phases. You'll have like before set and then you're on set, right? So before set, you're making all this stuff creatively. And then you'll have some of that VAD team go on set to these virtual production shoots. And they'll have to, sometimes it can still be creative where the director or the DP might ask, you know, now that we have it in context of the wall, which is important, by the way, it's the same idea as if you're making a game for VR. You don't judge it by your monitor. You judge it by putting the headset on, because ultimately that's how it's going to be consumed or looked at. So in a volume, there's only so much you can do beforehand until you get there. So once you're there, you get a small VAD team. And I was a VAD lead on Westworld. And we would get there and we would still tweak it. We'd have pre-light days, you know, with the director of photography. And I'd work with director of photography and we would figure out how do we marry this physical set's lighting with the digital set's lighting? And how do we get those to blend correctly so that through the lens of the camera, it's completely seamless. And it looks like you're really there, right? So that's a lot of what the VAD team will help out when they're on set for these kinds of things. It's the same thing on Westworld. And it's a Jonathan Nolan television show. So all of Westworld shot on film. So that's shot on film. We shot it at Nant Studios. Dope. Great team over there. Their volume completely encloses you, which I think that's the only volume I've been in personally that completely encloses you. And it has a ceiling. So it's pretty dope. And once you're there and like you're standing in your content and you're looking how the light falls off your hand, you know, you'll see people doing this a lot where like they're looking to see where the highlight of the light and how it falls off my knuckle or goes around my, how that wrap happened. See people walk in the volume and they'll be, oh, this is so interesting. Like how it's doing this. And so a lot of it's blending and marrying that whole thing together. And you do that in tandem, which we talked about earlier, you know, this virtual world smashing into traditional filmmaking, right? This is smack dab in the middle of that. So figuring out how to blend these things together and then, you know, improve the image is a lot of what the VAD do when they're on set. And that's a lot of what we did when we were on Westworld.
So you're, as you described, doing a lot of work beforehand, as much as you can, to be able to visualize it off outside the volume, but then ultimately needing to go into the volume to make sure that you're looking at it through the right cameras and on the right screen and that it all adds up. How much work does it become? How many surprises do you find in the volume that you just didn't see when you were offsite?
Oh, all the time, like all the time. And that's fine. That's like expected. You can get as close as you can beforehand, right? So a lot of times they'll send me out to do either set photography before we get there, or they'll send me out to like LiDAR scan the actual LED volume set so that we can plan as much as we can, right? Like if I have a LiDAR scan of a set, I can help the gaffer figure out where his lights, where are they gonna hang, you know, in the volume? Where's like the blocking of the action going to happen within the volume and emulate, how does the light fall off from the wall in Unreal? Like, how does that replicate back to, you know, in real life? And there's only so far you can go before you actually need to get there. There's probably some math curve of like diminishing returns, you know, of like, nope, just stop and go straight to the volume because you're just wasting your time. Because that's what really, really matters. Get it as far as you can, plan as well as you can, but you need to absolutely schedule days. You know, if you're making a film in the virtual production, the LED volume, schedule days for pre-lights. They are so important. And if you don't have them, you're in for a rough time.
Yeah, makes sense. I know that the volume's expensive, so people always try and keep that to a minimum. But if they're renting it, but if it's important.
Yeah, yeah.
What's it been like, you know, rolling through the past year of all the craziness in the film industry?
You know, Torchlight was
the kind of upset. Did that affect you?
Yeah, yeah. Not Torchlight. Torchlight, because we work early on. I mean, sometimes before the movie's even been greenlit. Like, it's usually just the directors that we're working with. So they solved their problems early on and all that, and they got their contracts, you know, fixed up for all what they wanted. So we were able to work with directors, and that's the bulk of like what we're here for. We're here to help visualize like much early on in the process, what this movie's going to look like in a similar fashion that, like, you know, when you work in an LED volume, you're bringing all you're really doing in a virtual production pipeline. You're taking content that begins at the end, visual effects, the final looking quality, and you're putting it like in the middle or the beginning, right? So we're doing the same idea for filmmakers or for directors and filmmakers is early on in the process, what is this going to look like? And how are we going to inform your team, you know, what this is going to look like? So it didn't affect us too much.
Oh, that's good. Glad to hear it. Yeah, it's been a bit of a wild time and it's still resolving. Yeah. Any advice that you would give to anyone starting out and being interested in this industry? What advice would you give to somebody who's kind of new to it, hasn't got in yet?
Three things. I always say these three things. One is when I'm on set and I'm working with a whole crew of people, I might not necessarily remember the person who is like the most incredibly talented, skillful person there, but I definitely remember all the hardest working people there, all the nicest people there, all the most collaborative people there, all the best, like, you know, humans that I work with on set. I always remember them. And of course the skillful, talented people, sure, like I'll connect with them and we'll chat and we'll do stuff, you know, but I always remember the most collaborative, nicest, hardest working people. So one, like no ego, no pride, full humility. And that will take you so much further than a lot of people out there. It's just that part. Two, you know, I talked about technology and being creative as like a spectrum of like how technically gifted you are versus how creative you are. And I still like to say that if you lean more technical, right, you'll be very useful for a year until the new thing comes out. But if you are very creative, you'll always be useful. Even if we're talking about the subject of AI, you still need to know an art direct, like how to tell a good story or what looks, you know, good or pleasing to the eye, right? You still need to know how to do that. That's why I've been agnostic to any lighting tool that I'm using, whether it's I'm on set with a gaffer or I'm in Unreal or I'm painting or whatever. Like, they're just tools, right? And so I rely now more on being creative because that will take me for my whole life. I'll be secure in that. What was the third thing? The third thing, I don't remember the third thing. It will remain a mystery. And that will get me on part two of this in the future, where I will reveal the third mystery. But no, for real,
stay
like
tuned,
it's
everybody.
Being collaborative and a hard worker and really putting your nose down and studying like what you're doing. And then being creative, you need to have technical skills because that's a world that we live in, right? You can't ultimately avoid it. You got to have it still, but don't completely rely on it because you're going to be chasing it just like I was. A new thing will come out and it will replace that thing. And you have to learn the new thing and then learn another thing and then learn another thing. And me personally, I just didn't like it. So lean being creative, observe where you are, just take it in, like really look at what's around you and really study film, or if it's games, like if you're into games, really study that. Or actually, there are something, if we're talking from a lighting perspective, I would study for sure paintings, classic paintings, and like some of the greatest cinematographers and photographers of our time. They're masters of lighting. And I'm always referring back to these filmmakers or photographers or classic pieces of art. I'm always referring back to them every time. I'm not usually going back and thinking, you know what? I think this filmmaker, when he made this movie about 12 years ago, I'd like to refer back to that for like what I want. I'm never doing, like, unless it's like some Oscar winner or something, but there's only one Oscar winner a year. So really pick your sources. Really pick your sources for what you're pulling inspiration from. You don't want to be led down necessarily like the wrong way. You want to be going toward what all these masters of the art have been pursuing their whole life. Like the guys painting all that stuff, right? Those guys, they painted all day long. I got to go to work. I got a 9-to-5. I don't think 9-to-5 existed back then. So they put their whole life into it. So
Yeah.
I could talk about this all day, dude. I know we're probably about to lock it down now, but.
Before we do, is there anything that you'd like to share with anyone, any work you want to share or links or places people can follow you?
So I'm on the show. Do they like link out my socials?
Yeah, we can do.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, of course I'm on LinkedIn. So I'm a cinematographer and lighting supervisor at Torchlight, right? So it's all about, for me personally, the future of filmmaking in this position is being a person who is a cinematographer on set, but also knows how to do the stuff in Unreal, because that's what we're moving towards, is this connected world together. And how do we do that, right? And there's not a whole lot of people. But I think you guys just talked to a guy from New York yesterday. I don't remember his name. I reached out to him, but he was a DP and a virtual production supervisor. So he is on the right track. And I think that's really awesome for him. So I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. I'm a photographer. So my Instagram handle is like DevinM_photography. I just came back. Oh, and I got an art station too. Forgot all about that. Thank you for posting that. And I'm always doing something, whether it's Unreal work or I'm filming something personally, you know, or taking pictures around LA or just around the country, around the world. I'm always chasing, you know, the Devin in like 5 years. That's what I'm always chasing. It's like, what am I going to be in 5 years? I look forward to like seeing how far I'm going to get in 5 years and another 5 years, like another 5 years. Like, what is that going to look like? So I'm always searching for it. I'm always trying to perfect it, which I guess is the artist's ultimate demise. You know, there's no ceiling to it. It's just as far as you can go. And that's exciting to me.
Oh, your enthusiasm is infectious. And hopefully, if not before, we'll have you back in 5 years to test that theory. But nice. Really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. I know you've got a lot going on. Appreciate you taking the time to share your wisdom and your knowledge and your enthusiasm with our viewers. Thank you. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it.
Me too. Yeah. And thanks to all of our listeners as well. Thanks for being here. Thanks for participating and being in the chat. We will be back again in another 2 weeks with episode 68, I guess. And if you've enjoyed today, you can follow us at becomecgpro.com or in our free Facebook group. On the school side, we also have an open day tonight. So if you want to come and join us and check out the school and see what we're all about and what we do in training people in Unreal Engine and virtual production and other things as well, games and whatnot, come to our open day, come check out what we're doing, and it's free and you're welcome to join us. Probably some links going out right now. But again, Devin, thank you for being our guest today. Appreciate you.
Thank you.
And we'll see you all soon. Take care, everybody.